everybody. I'm Marianne Katsidis, and this is the Heart-Led Changemaker podcast. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone where it felt so juicy and inspired that it left you feeling energized and ready to take on the world? There have been countless times I wished I could have recorded conversations like that because it felt criminal that no one else got to hear or experience that feeling. Those conversations ignite something inside of you because you visualize a new way to connect with others and sometimes even a new world. This show will provide you with ways to stay focused on the future, some food for thought, new ideas and concepts, a way to create abundance ethically, a showcase of those already doing the work and succeeding, and a sense of connection. Being a change maker can be very lonely, so this will serve as a community for heart-led warriors. Sit back and let this high-vibe, heartfelt conversation light you up. Today's guest is Carly Skelly. She and her partner are on a mission to help people reach their full potential in life, building stronger and more resilient individuals, families, and communities who've worked through their traumas, mental illness, and addiction while addressing violence and criminal activities that are creating destructive behaviors in homes, communities, and the city as a whole. Over the past 2 years, both Carly and her partner, Paul, have provided services and delivered courses to more than 300 beneficiaries. What they offer is a unique and pioneering approach that is not happening anywhere else in the world. Carly, welcome. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show. It's nice to finally meet you.
You too. And can we just have a moment for your accent? I just love the English accent. You're from Liverpool, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. It is so divine. Obviously, I'm an Aussie. We love the English accent. So that's just going to add to the flavour of this podcast today. So what I thought we'd start with is talking about the work that you're doing, because what I love about it is that you believe, and you both believe, that an integral part of our responsibility as leaders is to take care of the aftermath of our transgressions of the past and then turn these wounds into shared learning and restoration in our businesses and society. But I'd like to know, why is that so important to you?
I think both for me and Paul, and I'm sure Paul, if you catch up with him another time, can explain his story, but we've both kind of been through our own stuff in life. And through our own life experiences and life adversities, really, we've come to a point where we see the world always reactive, but always reactive to what's happening in the world and not really responding. So we wanted to bring a new approach and start to look at the world from a different angle, because we've seen so much happening for such a long time, but we never see real change. So I think when we got to a point in our own lives where we were like, something has to change, we have been on our own journey to try and find something new. And that's what our courses are. They're just something very different, but we're dealing with causes because, you know, we're everywhere in the world. I worked in the NHS for, I think it was about 10 years, and we're always treating the effect and the cause is never really dealt with. And that's something that we're both really passionate about.
For sure. And of course, you're going to be passionate about it. So how did PACT get started?
So we both have been on our own journey, really. Growing up for me personally, I'd gone through my own struggles. My mum had suffered with her own mental health. So she'd been involved with the NHS and the mental health service. Nothing was ever really, you know, we put a bandage over it, but nothing was ever really dealt with deeply. And that had major effects on me. So I began to find maybe my circles in the wrong circles. I was kind of like out knocking around the wrong people, getting myself into trouble. And I was unfortunate to become a victim of sexual assault. And that then led me to being quite a closed person. So for a very long time, on paper, it looked like I had everything right. I had my degree, I'd gone on to do my nursing. And I had this lovely family, we had our house. And I still felt very empty. I was just so numb. And I got to a point when I thought, there's got to be more to life. So I began to actually look back at the, you know, the past experiences that I've been through, which opens up a lot of stuff. But I went on this journey of trying to heal deeply rather than just covering up a few wounds. I actually tried to heal the wounds, which then actually inspired me to want to take this work to other people. Because I'd always seen the services maybe just trying to plaster up things and then send you on your way. And I just thought there's more to this life. And I know Paul's very similar because his dad had been in the same situation. He was in the mental health service. He had addiction. So we always say it was quite funny how we met, because we both lived a similar style story of like we've been raised in, with mental health being really prominent. So we were just very passionate of healing ourselves and breaking the generational cycle, because that's what happens. If we look back to our ancestral lineage, the same things always happen. It's a repeated cycle. And it's only when we can actually really break the cycle that we can create a new normal and a new future. So that's what we're both so passionate about, is breaking that cycle and empowering other people to know that they're able to break their own cycles from their own ancestral lineage.
I love that you were both on separate journeys, but similar, and that's the connection that brought you two together, but inspired the work that you're doing. And I love that you're doing that together. I really do. I'm curious to know, what is it like working together? Because to me, it feels like a beautiful balance of the feminine and masculine. Does it feel easy to do that work together, or have there been like some clunkiness along the way? Because you know, truth be told, I am a hopeless romantic. So, you know, I can, you know, when I look at that, you know, it's easy for me to, you know, for it to be inspired. But I'm just wondering, is that the reality? Has it been an ease because of the journeys that you've been on and because you've got that mutual passion?
It's definitely come with its challenges. Me and Paul were actually together in our last year of school. So we've been together for 20 years. So through all of our own stuff, our messy stuff that we've maybe, you know, just pushed aside for such a long time, we were there through all of it. And we both kind of hit a point where it was like, what are we going to do? Life can be so much more than what it is. So obviously, when we're working on ourselves and we're really having to dig deep into some of our past experiences, our traumas that have been really difficult, because in relation, we meet each other and we, you know, we fall in love with the person who we meet that time. And obviously we bring the stories into the relationship then. So we've had to, you know, learn how to handle one another's stories and the things that they bring into the moments. And then actually dealing with our own stuff brings up challenges then. So we've held each other and we've done amazing to get where we are now from the challenges that we've had. But it does bring us closer together. And we have learned the importance of working together in relation. Because as much as I worked on myself and Paul worked on himself, we needed to learn about each other's maybe attachment styles, trauma responses, and how we were both showing up in relation. So we've had to do a lot of work in relation together to just understand one another's stories. Because I met Paul at, how old are we, 16. Sometimes in the relationship, there's a younger part of Paul, like a younger version of him that's showing up, that's maybe not feeling enough love. And same for me, sometimes there's a part of me that closes off. And that was just the teenage hair part of me getting scared. So we needed to learn how to handle those approaches when we were present in the relationship.
I mean, that just makes your story even more amazing to me, because it is so rare that people who have had such significant trauma, both parties, that they are able to stay together and do the work and continue to hold space for each other all the way through. Because I don't think that's the norm, right? I think a lot of people, it's usually one, you know, potentially one person that's doing work on themselves and the other person isn't. There's always one ahead of the other, and a lot of the time separation happens. But because you were together from such a young age, I just think that, I mean, that's a miracle, right? Because life is tricky. And when you're, I know for me, you know, a majority of my healing has come outside of, like, I haven't been in a relationship while I've done, you know, the majority of my healing. And in a lot of ways, I'm grateful, because you know, so if I was having to hold space for someone else, that might have been really challenging. So in a lot of ways, I got to be a bit selfish about it. But when you're, especially when you're going through those early stages, right, of healing. So the fact that you both of you were able to do that and remain together and then transform it, where now you're helping other people break through and break through these generational curses. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Surely you feel like that, right?
Yeah, it's definitely amazing. And I do think, like, for what we've been through to still be here now is incredible. But like you said, a lot of people will say this is too difficult. You know, maybe we're not meant to be together. And so many people, like, split far too early. And we're seeing that in the world. There's so much separation. But the thing is quite often we meet a new partner and our same, you know, shadow elements of ourselves come back into that new relationship. And if that then can be like a never-ending thing, so until we heal individually and bring our healing together in relation, then people can actually overcome some of this stuff and we see more relationships lasting longer. But like you say, it's difficult work. It's not always easy.
No, it isn't. And, you know, like when you're, like you said, like right now in the way that the world is so separated, people don't really want to take the time to stand still and be next to somebody while they're working through things. But on the other side of it, exactly what you said, when you meet someone new, whether that's a new friend, whether that's a partner or whatever, especially with a partner, they are going to showcase to you and mirror back to you parts that you haven't healed yet, because that's what these relationships are for, is for our growth. But a lot of people don't understand that, you know, they're that it's an opportunity. Instead, they feel the resistance, they feel the uncomfortableness. And because we're in a society where people are fickle and people have the opportunity to swipe and get another person as soon as things start to feel uncomfortable, you know, it's like this conveyor belt where, like, no one is really standing still unless they're choosing to do the work. And when you start to do the work, you start to understand that it's like it's okay. I can stand still and see your shadow as aspect and still like you, love you, care for you, want to be there for you, hold space for you. But if they haven't started on that journey in any way, shape or form, it's going to be incredibly difficult for that relationship to find success. And I'm wondering, are you noticing that with the clients that you're helping, those who are single and those who are in relationships? Do you notice that kind of behavior and outcome even?
Yeah, definitely. So if I've got women who are, you know, working on themselves, they're on their own healing journey, it can become quite difficult, because often their shares will be that they, you know, delving into themselves. And often if their partner isn't on the same journey, there's a little bit of like this battle begins to happen because they're not on the same page. And I always say, because sometimes people say, you know, well, maybe somebody's just ascending, somebody's getting a little bit higher. There's no levels to us. Nobody is higher. And I think if we say, well, you know, we're higher, our ego's, you know, backdooring us a little bit there on this spiritual journey. But we just sometimes just go separate ways. We just take different paths. And it's important to sometimes know that sometimes if we grow, we're just changing. And if another person's not willing to change with us, then that's just a conversation sometimes we need to come to terms with. But what I absolutely love about the work that we do is that because Paul does men's work and I focus on the women's work, we've had so many people in relations who have been and done both of the courses. So we're seeing families change. So we're seeing a couple really come in unity and become the best versions of themselves to create a new future for their children. So it gives me so much hope for, you know, I'm a mum of two boys, and I can see, you know, so much hope for the people, the men and women stepping into this way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just so incredible. And I love that. And you're right, you know, like anything, you know, that there's that saying, you know, people come into your life for a season, a reason, or a lifetime. And sometimes it's just to activate you so that you find another component of yourself that needs healing. And then they're not meant to stay. You know, so when you look at relationships in that way, you know, they're not meant to stay with you long term, and others are. And so, you know, there's no coincidence for the people that you come across. But I love that you're finding that there are families that are healing as a result of the work that you're doing, and both partners are coming to do that work, you know, the male with Paul and the feminine with you. I just think that that's brilliant. I really do. So you're both quoted as saying, if everyone looks through broken glass, then together we are looking at a world that looks broken. And you say, when I notice my crack in the window and you notice yours, and we start healing our cracks, then we begin to look at the world through clear glass. And that's what trauma healing does. It starts unifying the world. And that really hit me in the feels. So I'd like to ask you, why do you think there is so much resistance to people looking at their cracks?
I think because we live in a world that if we start to look through our past lens and actually own the stuff that we've been through, the world doesn't always want to hear it, especially when we're, you know, maybe in our family situation that maybe we've not been held, we've not been supported in certain times, then there's an element of not wanting to speak out because we've already been told when we were younger, oh, just, you know, you're okay, be strong, be strong. So we think, well, okay, it must be, let's keep it inside because that's what must be strong means. And maybe when we have actually opened up and spoken out, that it's not been received in a way that we expect it, we would like it to be received. So we've all got really good at actually putting this armor on of just keeping it all inside. And I think there's a saying, like, people, it's something that probably annoys me a little bit when we see suicide. You know, that's the statistics are always on the rise, which is really upsetting. But so many people say, just talk. There's always somebody there to talk to. And my response to people that say that is, but did you give them a space to talk? Did you give them that environment to talk? Did anybody ever give them that environment to talk? Because yet we can talk, but we need to feel safe. We need to have that trust. We need to know that we will be received no matter what we bring. And I Don't Feel the World gives us all of that. Now, it's absolutely amazing now that I think across the world, it's not just in Liverpool, I'm seeing so much happening and people are getting given this space to talk. Not everyone knows about it yet. They've not been introduced to this world of vulnerability is strength. It's okay to cry and it's strong. So I think when we're given the space and we can then build trust and know that we're okay, the world could be a different place, but it's not been like that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know if it's international or if it's just in Australia. We've got this thing called Are You Okay Day, where you are, you know, you know, it's like a national thing, I think, but there's posts and different things where it's, you know, are you okay? And you're supposed to encourage yourself to ask other people, are they okay? But exactly what you're saying, when you say that to somebody and you ask somebody that, or how are you, most people just say good, but they're not good. Most of the time they are definitely not good. And when you look at the way that the world is, I would say 90% of the people are not good. But we don't let ourselves say that we're not good because it's an automatic response to say good because you don't want to put your burden on someone else. But also, like you said, you know, am I giving someone else the space to say what they really feel? And on the other side is, you know, if you're in that situation, are you going to be received well? Like if you said to somebody, actually, no, I'm not that good. Sometimes, and I've tested this before, the other person looks disappointed that you just haven't said good. Like it's annoying that you're not just good and they can just get on with it. You know, they don't really want to hear. And so I think that's where some of the disconnect in our society is, that people are so hyper-focused on getting things done, doing things, getting, you know, their wealth, their, you know, all the bells and whistles of things, all the material things, but they're not taking the time to actually connect in like individual to individual. And so how are those conversations possible when we're operating like that? And I feel frustrated and disappointed too, same as you, because if we just slowed down and we just spent time genuinely asking and being in integrity, right, asking the questions of, to someone else, how are you? And actually just waiting and trusting that that person is going to answer however they're going to answer, but it, you know, taking the time to feel into whether that feels true or not is a gift to somebody else, right? Like I think when I ask somebody how are they, I genuinely want to know. And then I let myself feel whether they are actively being honest with me or not. And I might say, are you, you know, with like a little tilt of the head, like, really, are you okay? And sometimes they'll say, actually, no, but I don't want to get into it. And that's fine. But at least you're still giving that person an opportunity. And I think the work that you're doing and these groups and this group work especially is important, because at least if people aren't getting that in their day to day, at least they've got a refuge, right? They've got somewhere that they can come and say, actually, no, I'm not okay. I don't feel great. I don't feel comfortable and open talking to the people around me because they're not holding that space for me. They're not giving me the opportunity to do that. And so do you feel like, you know, that's the same, you know, in the UK, in Australia, that's what I'm noticing. But in the UK, are you seeing that as well? Like, is that what, you know, is resonating for you too?
Yeah, I think there's days, obviously you said yourself, like, you know, being okay kind of day. And there's like mental health day.
Yes.
And again, it's just a word, and people think, oh, and it makes people think that day, oh, you know, some people are struggling, but it doesn't really deal with anything. And I think even saying to people, you're okay, the question itself, if you think of the language we use, are you okay? So all you can really answer is yeah or no. And if it's a no, it's like, oh, okay, then we'll maybe try and do something that makes you feel better. But a question I try and use is, how are you feeling? And people will say, oh, I'm sound, I'm okay, yeah, I'm all right. I'm like, okay, but that's a logic concept of how you are or how you assume to be, how you're feeling. And so many people don't know how to explain how they're feeling. Okay, so, you know, if we're angry, okay, so anger is a word. How does that feel in your own body? And so many people don't know how to feel. Like you said, the world is moving so fast. It's moving faster than we can actually keep up with, which is why we're seeing such a pandemic in mental health, in suicide, even in autoimmune disease. So this pandemic that we're in now, our nervous systems can't keep up with it. So as the world's getting faster, our nervous systems aren't. So my aim is to kind of help people build a more resilient immune system, a more resilient nervous system to keep up with the pace of the world. But by just understanding how we feel, so important. And, you know, we see people who are maybe feeling low, anxious, just no purpose in life, maybe addiction. And when we say addiction, sometimes the first things that come to mind are, you know, alcohol and drug. We're seeing, you know, food, sugar addiction and gambling and sex and porn and so many types of addiction that maybe aren't really thought of when we hear the word addiction. And it's because people are trying to actually just feel, but it's an impulse. Yeah, they just want that quick fix. And the world is coming to a point where we can get that quick fix all the time. We're actually releasing too much dopamine in like just fast bursts. And we're not actually learning to hold our emotions, our feelings, and slow down and actually feel. So we're numb. And then we're like, we want to hit. Let's go, let, you know, be impulsive with something. So it's just becoming aware of how we're actually feeling. And when we know how we're feeling, we can start to then try and create change. But, you know, the world just isn't making it as easy for so many people to say, look, this is where I'm at. And if you can imagine the question we said before, if we said to somebody, how are you feeling? And they said, oh, awful, I feel awful. It's like, can people hold that? How would people respond to that? A lot of time people would be like, oh, okay then.
That's exactly right. And like, that was the example that I gave, right? Because you see people go, oh, and they don't know what to do because then they have to feel something as well. And so it's this awful cycle where, you know, if you can ask somebody, how are you feeling? And they respond, then you can say, okay, great. But if someone says, how are you? And they say, I'm just not feeling great. I feel awful. You know, if that person isn't in the space where they are letting themselves feel, they're going to stay in that run cycle, which is I've got to find something to alleviate and give me a hit of something else because I don't want to feel that. I don't even want to feel what that other person is feeling. You know, our world is filled with these stimulants and these quick fix solutions that are helping people stay completely disconnected. And it's sad. I feel sad that we're like that.
And it's such a shame because it's, you know, this is probably like another conversation that we could get lost in, but the world is setting us up to fail.
Yeah.
You know, even now if we look at the masculine and feminine, men have always been like that. Man, they go out, they provide. That's their purpose is to provide and protect. But we're living in a time now where women are working, so women can actually financially look after themselves. They're able to do stuff like my background. I was also a professional boxer. So like we're quite tough and we can look after ourselves. And that's actually taken a little bit of men's purpose away, which is why we may be seeing a lot of men struggle. Because without that role as the protector and the provider, there's a lack of purpose. And when men don't have a purpose, that will have an impact. And then for women as well, like we're seeing so many families breaking down. But women used to be at home and nurture the children and nurture the family and be there, be available. The way the cost of living is going, it's not that easy to have a one parent work and one parent stay at home kind of family anymore. And that is having an effect. And we're seeing young children, babies, toddlers that just need that love, need that attention, but they can't get it as much as they need. So they're having their own effects. You know, we're seeing such a rise in ADHD in children now. And, you know, that's got the whole paradigm of, you know, in schools that, you know, they're not getting the needs met. The schools aren't equipped to maybe handle what their needs are. And it stems from trauma. And when we say trauma, it's not just this big significant event. Like for me, my trauma was this big significant event. I went through abuse. But there's also trauma and developmental, which, you know, pretty much all of us will have gone through, just not having our needs met in young children. Parents love their children and will do absolutely everything for them. They can't meet their needs if they're having to pay the bills and be at work. So that is having an impact on children. So you can see that, you know, we're up against it. The world's making it difficult for us. So it's so important to try and be aware and make life work for us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really do want to talk to you about this because that's how I feel as well, right? So when you look at the world is set up for us to fail, that's what you said first, and that is so on point. It's not even funny. When you look at the feminism side of things, and as women, we can talk about this, you know, from our perspective, but there was an imbalance between the masculine and the feminine, the toxic masculine, right? The patriarchy, not men in general, but the patriarchy. So of course there needed to be a rebalance there. But what the most, you know, fucked up thing about things is that women with all these extra rights that we have now, we've got more on our plate than we did before, right? So not only are we still caring, you know, not me, but I don't have children, but, you know, not only are women caring for their children, they're still looking, you know, after their partners, their homes. Now they're working as well. On top of everything else, there's an extra load put on. Instead of a freedom, it was an extra load. And men's load didn't change in any way, shape or form for the most part. Some men stood in, but the imbalance that's come that I've noticed between the masculine and the feminine bothers me so much. I feel so sad that men don't know how to be in the masculine anymore, and women have stepped so far into the masculine as well that then the men have to, and it's because it's the polarity, men start to become more feminine, but they don't feel comfortable in that because that's not their true nature. So there's this continuous conflict and an imbalance that comes, right? And so then when you look at how you've got, then you look at the financial circumstances, the world circumstances. So interest rates going up, People losing their jobs, scrounging for anything. Now people are panicked because of what happened with COVID. So now the fear is continuously there because what if this happens again? Which it might, all the what ifs are at their height and point now. And so they don't feel like they can make any choices other than, staying in these jobs and working all these extended hours. So they can't possibly give their kids meet their children's needs on an emotional level because they don't have the capacity or the time to do that. And you're right, the schools don't either. But the worst thing is that the machine, the world machine out there is driving people to want to be to have a bigger house, to have a better car. So they have to work so they can compete with each other. But they're in a cycle where they've actually forgotten where the real values are, like where the true connection is, what is like most important, and that is their family unit, caring for their family, being in there together in harmony. And when you're spending time driving the dollar and driving for all those material things, there's no possible way that you can do both. That you just can't. It's not possible. It's not humanly possible. And even in energetically and emotionally, I don't think you can do it. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. It's just the world is very disbalanced right now. And I think obviously the fight for equality. So women have wanted this equality for so long. And rightly so, because women for such a long time have been abused and we've just been a property to men. If we go all the way back to the witch trials and before the Christianity church, women had, such more freedom in the world, and, they were such a powerful source. They were the herbalists, the midwives, and that became a little bit too concerning that men felt like these can take over and they used their masculine strength in a toxic way. And that happens for such a long time. So women have been suppressed for such a long time that over more recent years, we've seen this war and battle to like women fighting to be known in the world and to be free. However, a fight is a fight. Now, for me, for somebody that's been abused by men and been hurt by the men and the masculine, I actually want to empower women and men just as much equally, because I sometimes notice that there's a toxic femininity that's developed through this fight of women wanting to be seen and wanting to be paid what they're worth, but they've maybe become disbalanced and overstepped into that masculinity role themselves, but in an unbalance, in more of a toxic way. They may be hating on the men who have hurt us. And it's not just the men in our individual traumas now, but our ancestral lineage, our grandparents and great-grandparents have all probably been through some sort of abuse, because that was the way the world was in them days. And now we're trying to bring balance into the world. That can't be done with a fight. And if we're leading from our wounds from the past, whether they're our own individual or our ancestral wounds, we're still fighting. So we're not bringing that peace that we say we want. So I think for me personally, it's so important for men to do the work individually on themselves, to understand themselves and heal their past, for women equally to do the work on themselves, to bring themselves into balance, so that then the masculine and feminine can come together in unity rather than competition. Because what we see in the world now in most areas, it's competition over collaboration, over connection. And without connection, then the world becomes so disbalanced. It's like a war happening all the time. Even in ourselves, we have this internal war happening. When we start to actually address our own stuff, then we can bring inner peace. Then when we brought our own inner peace, we can look at bringing peace into our environment, our family, our community, by community and connection, by lifting one another up, not trying to get over everybody, but helping and all lifting each other together. And that is what a balanced woman in a true femininity is about. It's about stepping up for women, but lifting the men with her and seeing maybe the unbalance in the world from a compassionate space rather than this shadow element of resentful and jealous and bitterness that sometimes, I've definitely been that woman in my past. I've been really resentful of the life that I've lived and bitterness of people that have hurt me. That was my driving force for such a long time. That got me through my degree and, you know, got a great job, and then I become a professional athlete, all from that. So I thank that part of me, if I want to say that, that maybe toxic part of me, I thank it because it got me to where it got to, trying to keep me safe, but it also took me away from love and joy.
Yes.
And when we can really drop into our heart, we can see the world in a different place.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I've had that journey as well. You know, before I did the internal work and faced the shadow aspects of my own psyche, if you will, absolutely, I'd gone too far in the masculine mode, because one, I was trying to protect myself. I wanted to prove my worth. I was, you know, oscillating between people pleasing and being, you know, really, you know, overly zealous, if you will. And so, but that comes from that imbalance. And then when you harmonize it, you can be compassionate, and then you can look at men and see where the imbalances are. You can see where there is opportunity to lift them. And I think a lot of the feminines have been doing the work a little bit longer than the masculines, which is fine. But I feel like there is a responsibility that we have to see those opportunities and to use it to lift them up and to not keep us in that disconnect. You know, I've said this before on another podcast, but years ago I started these YouTube videos, if you will, and they were all about helping the divine masculines. And I wanted to help women help men, which was, you know, this, we're talking maybe like 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, the world was not ready for me saying, I want to help men, you know, like that, that it didn't take off, and I was annoying a lot of people, and that's fine. But I saw the opportunity then. It was kind of ahead of its time in a lot of ways. And I wish I kept those videos. I deleted it because there was no traction. Well, then it didn't mean anything. So whatever, I was so cranky at myself for that. However, you know, I think slowly we're starting to see women see that opportunity. And my wish for the feminines listening is to put down the weapons, you know, to know that you can protect yourself in the gentleness of the feminine rather than being in the masculine. Like, we don't have to be acting in that energy, and we can find that middle balance. Sometimes you do have to step into it and use it. But again, the feminine and the masculine within us has to be balanced. And when we're in union, especially in our family units, it is so important to let the masculine be the masculine. You can't have two masculines. Even in same-sex relationships, yeah, there's a feminine and a masculine. Like, you cannot in all relationships, even friendships, there's a masculine and a feminine. That just doesn't work that way, you know. And I feel like because of the way that the world is set up, like what we were saying, you know, it is encouraging us to not pay attention to that opportunity and that,
yeah,
that compassion. And yeah, I love that you were saying that. I really do. Now, changing paths completely, because we could talk about that for several hours, and maybe we can do another podcast just on that. I really like to know about the boxing side of things, because I was so surprised to see that, you know, you are competing on a professional level, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the boxing was never kind of like a path that was there for me. And I'd never really thought about it. Paul actually boxed himself when he was like in his teens to like maybe about 20. And then we were together really young. So we had Aidan at 19. And obviously then he had to go to work. So it was difficult for him to carry on. And that was kind of the end of boxing. And then one day, I was actually running. I was doing a lot of running, and I loved doing stuff for charity. I'd lost my nan to Alzheimer's, and I was quite passionate about just raising money for things. And I got injured, and I don't know where it came from, but I just thought, I wouldn't mind doing like a charity fight. And that was like the beginning of a whirlwind of, I think, eight years. I absolutely loved it. Paul had watched me because he knew boxing. He was like, "You've done really well." So he took me to his old amateur club, and within 3 months, I was out boxing, fighting them. I think I went up to Sheffield for my first fight, and Sid, my coach, was, I think he absolutely loved the style of boxing. I was a go forward. I was a fighter, and I think because of the life I'd lived, and I'd probably not have started my own healing journey at this point, I had that anger in me. I think for looking back now, the boxing was a way of me maybe working through some of my stuff, but that was an unconscious way of working through it at the time. I wasn't really aware, and it's only now I look back, I think that was a lot of my frustration, a lot of my energy that I'd suppressed, a lot of my anger coming out in a healthy way, because it was okay to fight in the boxing ring. But yeah, it just progressed really well. I boxed for England. I represented the region. I went and travelled. We went over to Eindhoven in Holland, and I got a silver medal over there. And it was just like a whirlwind. I absolutely loved it. But then sometimes you fall short and don't get the decisions that maybe you think you should have. So I sat with it and thought, you know what, I'm going to turn professional. And at this point, I was actually doing what I do now. I was involved with PACT. So I was nursing, and that was slowing down as I was building my own business, because obviously the NHS, we need it. It's amazing. Some of the things that I mightn't have really agreed with and how mental health is dealt with. And I wanted more of a holistic approach because I'd started this journey and knew there was so much more available to us out there. But I was still boxing as that transition was happening. And I was just really lucky at this point, obviously working on myself. I was such a big believer in the power of visualization and manifesting, and manifested titles. And I got the opportunity to box for the Commonwealth title. And that was on a big Sky Box Office televised show. Unfortunately, it was while we were in lockdown, so there was no audience there. Obviously, the whole world seeing it on the telly, but there was no one in the arena. But I think just that whole experience was such an incredible thing. I didn't really notice nobody was there. I was just so in the moment and just enjoyed it. But I didn't get the decision. I got given a draw. And again, I thought I'd won that fight, and we were set up to have a rematch, which didn't happen. She pulled out really short notice. So I went on and I won the WBC International title at super bantamweight, which I still hold. And I then went on to box in America last year for the WBA, and I lost that fight. And it was not long after that fight that I had to think about it, and I decided to retire. Last year, I made the decision to retire from boxing, because I sometimes felt like I was living two worlds. I was, being this heart-led woman, and then the next thing, I was getting in to fight. And as much as I loved boxing, it was the politics around it just didn't sit well for me, and I found it quite frustrating at times. And I just thought, it's got to be a focus on my career with PACT, or I continue with my boxing. And yeah, I made a decision, probably not from the mind. I actually dropped into my heart and went with PACT, because for me personally, I felt like this was more of a career that was needed for the world.
Oh, and I love that. I mean, that's such an unbelievable, like by accident, by just one idea that you thought that you could help this charity, that you just had this inspired idea, you ended up being and competing at a Commonwealth level. I mean, that's an international level. I mean, that's like mind blowing, so mind blowing. And then to choose to step into the heart space, to drop into the heart space and decide from there what was going to happen next, when you could have easily kept trying to do both and knowing that
Yeah.
actually there's a vision and a mission bigger than you that you need to fulfill. I mean, that's incredible, so incredible. And I hope that you know that. I hope people tell you that all the time.
I think I do now. I think last year I was probably really hard on myself, thinking, oh, I think because of my last fight I'd lost. So obviously the ego, the element of me, like the more masculine part of me, was like, oh, did I walk away too soon? Does it look like I've quit? And that element of looking like I've quit was more, I was only concerned what other people thought, because I knew I hadn't, but I did have an element of thinking, what will people think of me? And being with that, and you know, I've got some good people around me, and the amount of people have said, if you look at what you've done on paper, I shouldn't have done what I did. I've like more than like proved myself in the boxing world and to myself that, you know, the dedication I've got and the willpower to actually succeed. So I can actually look back and say, I 100% had an amazing experience. I made the right decision in walking away from it when I did. And I know I did absolutely incredible. But I did probably have my moments where I was probably hard on myself for a little bit. But yeah, I've gone beyond that. And I actually can say to me, like, well done, mate.
Of course. And,
yeah.
I hope that you continue to take time to celebrate that journey, because that is so unusual and so incredible. It really is. I just love that so much. Out of all the questions I wanted to ask you, that was probably at the top of my list about the boxing, because I was like, how does that fit into all the things? Like, I was just so curious. So thank you for sharing that part of it. So
yeah,
I guess, like, so you've got PACT, Paul is helping men and you're focused on helping women, but I noticed that there's a focus on community and businesses in Liverpool specifically. And so did you see a need in your local area? How did that come about?
Yeah, so obviously we've both been doing work with individuals who maybe want to work on themselves. So we're actually thinking, I want to step into some sort of healing journey to just find my purpose, maybe feeling lost in life. And that's how it began. And then as it's kind of evolved over time, we work now alongside a lot of organisations and more vulnerable organisations. So we have a side of our business where we try and give back to the community, because this way obviously isn't always accessible for everyone. And the way the world is, like, we can see that in the world, things that should be accessible aren't. And we want to be a very different kind of business organization to say that this works for everybody and everybody can do it. So we'll do what we can to make this supportive for everybody. We then, more recently, over the last year, I've been looking at getting into more corporate companies, bigger organizations, workplaces, because if people are working on themselves and then going into work, and work quite often can be quite stressful and led by people who are maybe so lost in that drive, let's earn, let's tick boxes, let's, you know, keep the numbers, that has an impact on the workforce. That workforce has to go home, and what we see is personal and professional life intertwines. So if we're all healed and happy and then we go into a place where there's not so much harmony and we feel that there's an under appreciation of the work that we do, we turn up to work probably not actually giving our best then because we don't feel valued. We bring work home back into home life and home life back into work life. We felt that we were just missing an area, and ideally we want to hit every area to actually bring more of a trauma-informed approach, because the way we see the world, we look at mental health. So we deal with people with their mental health, but mental health is a byproduct of trauma. So we want to make Liverpool a trauma-informed city. And I know we're probably seeing it in some areas across the world. Right now, trauma-informed approach is quite new. So we want people to go beyond the mental health and say, why have they got mental health? Because when we can get to the root and the core, we know a little bit more about why people have mental health, we can actually start to create long-lasting change. Like, the statistics we see, they're continuously rising. So everything we're doing isn't working. The numbers prove that. So when we can actually go beyond the mental health, it's the same with addiction. You know, people have got addiction. They're trying to drown out, maybe not feel the trauma that they've been through. So all of this mental health addiction is a byproduct of trauma.
I mean, what a gift to that community, really, to be trauma informed and for everyone to be operating, like, ultimately for everyone to be operating at that level, and hopefully expand and expand and expand and expand. I mean, that is truly incredible to lead the way and to do that for your community, I think is it's pretty outstanding. And was that part of your original plan?
No, but it was more working with individuals, and it's just kind of obviously we evolve, and the business has just evolved over time. And right now, we might be more like gardeners, and we're just planting seeds at the minute because not everybody's there, and that's okay. When you were speaking before about the YouTube videos you've made about 10 years ago, you said just, men weren't ready at that point. You planted seeds, and it might have been from those moments that little seeds are planted, and over time, somebody else planted the seed, and then people start to water them seeds when they're ready. But right now, we're just watering the seed, planting the seeds across the city to start letting people see the world from a different lens and see that there are different opportunities and new possibilities that can be created. So the aim is to, eventually become a trauma-informed city and then bring this work further afield nationally. And I know it's so much is happening globally, but it's in small places, it's in dots, it's quite scattered. But the more people sharing this type of work, speaking their truths and sharing their vulnerabilities with the world, we're just putting them seeds out there, and hopefully people will water them when they're ready to water them.
Yeah,
Because I don't
absolutely.
think anyone.
I'm thinking about, I'm in Australia, I'm in Adelaide, South Australia, and I'm thinking how would that look if that work applied here? How many people are in Liverpool?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't answer
I
that.
don't know either. I might have to
Yeah.
do some research and have a look, but I'd be curious to know how. If all of the communities, all the local communities did that, this world would change pretty quickly, right? And it would in its own time and in its own way. But if everyone was doing a little bit of that, and
Yeah.
really, and there are some really incredible people who are infiltrating in the corporates and trying to bring back that balance. And there are people who are helping individuals outside of the workplace. But to have a mission and a vision where you're wanting to attack all the areas, not just one, and help people, come through on that journey, I think that's pretty genius. And that's why you're a change maker. That's why I wanted to talk to you. You are a change maker. What do you love most about being a change maker?
I like to give people hope. I think hope is something that the world has lost. We don't feel that there's a way out of the mess that we're in. For me personally, I thought this was just going to be my life quite flat and, just ticking boxes forever. And although from the outside looking in, people might have thought it was all cushy and cozy, but I had my own struggles, and I didn't really have hope because I knew the system. I'd worked in the system, I'd seen my mum in the system and the failings that had happened to her, and I probably didn't have a lot of hope for change. And since doing this work, I have hope for the future generation. I have hope for myself to know that I can live a happy, fulfilled life. And I think when we have that little bit of hope, it allows people to continue to try and be better, try and step into their power to own their own greatness. And I think it's important that we all have a little bit of hope.
Oh, you are wonderful. I love that so much. Everything that you're doing, everything that you've said has just been so on point. Thank you so much for joining me, and having this important conversation and sharing the work that you're doing with Paul on PACT and your journey and the boxing and everything. It's been so lovely to talk to you, and I really appreciate you taking that time out for me.
No, thank you so much as well for inviting me on the show. I've really enjoyed it. We love a good chat about all this stuff. It feels like a chat, doesn't
It does. It
it?
absolutely does. But right
Yeah.
before you go, before I forget, I almost forgot. How can my audience connect with you? How can they find you? What's the best way?
So I have my Instagram page, which is Women's Pact Mentality, and it's man, not mentality.
Yes.
Paul's page is Pact Mentality, so if men and women are looking for, men or women work, my page will be the women's, Paul's will be the men's. We have our website, which is www.pactmentality.com, and we're both on LinkedIn. That's for more of our corporate world that are looking to maybe bring this trauma-informed approach into their workplace, and that's men and women's Pact Mentality.
Beautiful. And I will include the links with this podcast anyway, but I just wanted you to share that in case people wanted to were inspired right now to connect with you. So thank you again. And I'll just absolutely, I mean, adoration of the work that you're doing. And I look forward to seeing Liverpool transform. I'll be watching from the sidelines, watching it transform with the work that both of you are doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for putting these podcasts on, because I think it's so important when people sometimes are wanting to know what's happening in the world, look for a podcast. And like yourself, we're sharing some of this wisdom and allowing people to see the world can be different if we want it to be. So thank you for giving this to the world as well.
Thank you. I'm a chatterbox, so this is my outlet. Thanks so much, Carly.
Thank you.